ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, Corbin Middlemass here from ABC Cricket Podcast. There has never been a more anticipated Ashes series than the one going down this summer. Australia versus England is always huge, but this feels generationally massive. A crucial clash needs a comprehensive analysis. So check out ABC Cricket Podcast. Join me and ex-Australia opener Ed Cowan every Monday and Friday, as well as after every day of play for the best conversation in cricket. Search for ABC Cricket Podcast on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yothu Yindi famously sang about a treaty for First Peoples back in 1991, and the nation danced along. Well, this week marks a huge moment in Australian history, perhaps a turning point, as Victoria becomes the first state to have a treaty.
The very first time in this country's history, a state is preparing to enter a treaty with First Peoples. This is not a small step. It is a rupture in the national story, a shift in power, a promise that tomorrow can be different from yesterday.
It's the culmination of a long social justice campaign for self-determination. But just how different will things be in Victoria tomorrow? Hello, I'm Natasha Mitchell. Welcome to ABC Radio National's Big Ideas. Great to have your ears. This Friday, a ceremonial exchange of the treaty happens between the Victorian Government and the First Peoples Assembly of Victoria, the co-chair of which is Womba Womba Yorta Yorta Dada Roa and Jaja Warang woman, Ngara Murray. And she presented this year's 25th Dr. Charles Perkins Oration at the University of Sydney, which we're bringing you on the show today. The late Charles Perkins led the 1965 Freedom Rides, Australia's version of the US Civil Rights Movement. A year later, he became the first Aboriginal person to graduate from an Australian university. And his legacy lives on, including in the work of his trailblazer daughters. The filmmaker Rachel Perkins and curator Hetty Perkins. Here now is Ngara Murray.
Thank you, and good evening, everyone. First Peoples have been caring for country for at least tens of thousands of years. Pre-colonisation, Australia was home to more than 250 distinct Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander language groups and over 800 dialects spoken across the land. Each language carried the stories, laws, songs and knowledge systems that connected people to country. Being part of the oldest continuous living culture on this planet is to walk in the footsteps of our old people whose knowledge, stories and spirit stretch back more than 65,000 years. It is to carry a history so vast that it predates the pyramids. It is to hold the wisdom of this land and the law that has been passed down from generation to generation. The enormity of this truth is humbling and powerful. It means we have unbroken bloodlines. Our people are guardians of the world's most ancient stories and the keepers of a legacy that continues to guide our future. Connection to country is as profound as it is unique. Our cultural practices are founded on and embedded within a worldview in which people and country are one. The land now known as Australia was not discovered by the British Crown or founded by settlers. The sovereignty of First Peoples has never been ceded and continues to exist. So this evening, I acknowledge the Gadigal lands and the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and their sacred and unceded sovereign lands that we gather on. I pay respect to the warriors of the frontier wars and resistance fighters. I honour elders, past and present, and the generations yet to come who carry the strength of their ancestors in their spirit. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. There's a memory that has always stayed with me, and it was when Dr. Charles Perkins AO came down to the Moama Local Aboriginal Land Council to speak with our people in the 1980s. And as kids, we were in awe listening to him speak, and we knew he was an important man as he wore a suit. As black kids in this country, we were often brought into rooms many our age never see. Meetings, community gatherings, demonstrations and political spaces where decisions about our lives are made. We grew up listening to the language of change, strategy and struggle, learning early what it means to carry responsibility. We witness the weight our parents and elders hold, and we quietly absorb the lessons, how to speak up, when to stand firm, and why our voice matters. These experiences shape us into leaders before we even realise it, grounding us in a legacy. For me in the 80s, that was a moment listening to Dr. Perkins that day, and it left an impression on me. Dr. Perkins had many interactions with my family over decades through his strong relations with my grandfathers, Pastor Sir Doug Nichols and Stuart Murray, and my father, Gary Murray. And through the various meetings, conventions, campaigns and events they attended together, and their work through the Federal Council for the Advancement of Aborigines and Torres Strait Islanders, FACATSI, National Tribal Council, National Aboriginal Sports Foundation, and the National Aboriginal Football Carnivals. So I feel very fortunate to stand before you today and to pay tribute to Dr. Charles Perkins AO. Originally, I was to deliver this oration with the other co-chair of the First Peoples Assembly, Reuben Berg. While we were both very excited to deliver this together, there was one small obstacle in the way, which is the statewide treaty bill currently being debated tonight in the upper house of the Victorian Parliament, which means it's very close to parliamentary passage. We thought perhaps one of us should be back in Melbourne holding down the fort when Australia's first treaty passes the Parliament. And Reuben is right now in Melbourne, in Spring Street in the Parliament. And I want to acknowledge him and his work ethic. And he's an amazing person to share this leadership role with on behalf of the Assembly. So my name is Ngara Murray, and I'm a proud Yorta Yorta, Wamba Wamba, Jaja Warang Dudurawa woman. I grew up on Yorta Yorta country as a little black girl down the south end of Shepparton. My totems are the Bigarumja, the emu, and Murrin, the black cockatoo. My identity in who I am cannot be confined to one place alone, as my family has strong bloodlines to multiple countries and clans, which means carrying the strength of many lands and ancestors and the spirit of my kin. Our Nichols and Murray family connection makes us culturally strong and deeply grounded in truth that our story belongs to more than one place, and all these places, they belong within me. We carry that right and cultural responsibility, as this is granted through inherited roles within our families, through earning the right by respectful behaviour and cultural responsibility. My family has been involved in the fight for rights and justice in this country over seven generations, and that fight continues today through me. We've been vocal about the impacts and the conditions of our people for a very long time. And our active participation in the fight for rights and land rights movements includes the 1881 Maloga petition, the 1886 Corranderk deputation to the Victorian Parliament, the 1938 Day of Mourning here in Sydney, the 1939 Cummeragunja walk-off, the 1963 Aborigines Advancement League petition to the United Nations, the 1965 Lake Tyers protest, and my grandfather Stuart Murray's fight for his land through the soldier settlement scheme, along with his 1988 letter to the Premier of Victoria calling for compensation and treaty, and the numerous land rights protests across Victoria. I am co-chair of the First Peoples Assembly of Victoria, the independent democratically elected body representing traditional owners of country and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Victoria on our journey to treaty. The Assembly is made up of 33 elected members representing five regions and many tribes and communities across Victoria. And I represent the people of Naam, so the people in Melbourne. The Assembly stands as a powerful expression of Aboriginal democracy, a place where our voices are united, our rights are asserted, and our future is shaped by us. Our story began long before we were all born, when our ancestors walked this land and our law was law. Our story is of extraordinary strength and survival, a testament to an invincible spirit that has withstood the tests of time. Our people are deeply connected to the land through stories, languages, songlines, and systems of relational sovereignty that have guided our way of life for thousands of generations. These stories are not just told. They live within country, carrying knowledge of creation, law, and belonging that bind people to place and to one another. Relational sovereignty reflects the understanding that every being in our cosmos, the people, the land, sky, stars, waters, animals, birds, plants, is part of an interconnected web of responsibility and respect. Across the continent, this shared foundation of story and songlines forms a living network that unites Aboriginal nations, reminding us that sovereignty is not just political, but spiritual and cultural, held through care, kinship, and connection to our lands and waters. First Peoples hold powerful and enduring relationships with one another that reach far beyond colonial borders, connecting communities across the entire country. These relationships are built on kinship systems, cultural responsibilities, and shared histories that have maintained peace and trade and alliance. These connections remind us that no nation stands alone. Each is a part of a larger network of belonging grounded in respect, reciprocity, and care. Today, our sense of unity is strong, whether through shared struggles for rights or challenges, through our sporting carnivals, our ceremonies, the movement of voice, treaty, truth, or the continued practice of culture. Aboriginal people continue to uphold the deep ties that bind us together as one across all countries. Victoria as a state and Australia as a nation are on the edge of history. For over two centuries, the First Peoples of this land have stood in defiance of invasion, dispossession, and denial. We have survived policies designed to erase us, institutions built to exclude us, and a nation that for too long looked away from our truth. But now something extraordinary is happening. We are standing on the threshold of a new era, the treaty era. For the very first time in this country's history, a state is preparing to enter a treaty with First Peoples. This is not a small step. It is a rupture in the national story, a shift in power, a promise that tomorrow can be different from yesterday. Progress and justice are not linear progressions. They are moments in history when people take action. A healthy society must include those who identify its flaws and strive to fix them. The people best placed to identify those issues are those that are affected by them. Treaty is based on a simple principle. Treaty recognises that Aboriginal people are the experts when it comes to our countries, our cultures, and our communities. Treaties are about practical change that improves the livelihoods of our people and strengthens the health, well-being, and prosperity of our communities. Treaty at its heart is about new relationships, about two parties coming together. It's the beginning of something new, a middle space. It is coexistence where we begin to shape a better future together, one that recognises and respects the First Peoples of this land. When I reflect on the long road that has brought us here to the edge of a treaty, I think of leaders who walked before us, leaders who stood in the face of injustice and chose hope, leaders like Dr. Perkins. Dr. Perkins spoke truth without fear. He carried a fire within him, a belief that our people deserve dignity, equality, and self-determination. Aboriginal affairs to be run by Aboriginal people. He dedicated his life to breaking down the barriers of racism and inequality that held our people back. Dr. Perkins' legacy continues to remind us that real change begins when we refuse to accept injustice as normal. When I think of leaders like Dr. Perkins, or even my own great-grandfather, Pastor Sir Doug Nicholls, I think of the bridges they built between black and white, between government and community, between the pain of the past and the hope of the future. They did not live to see a treaty, but they laid the foundation for it. Their vision lives in all of us. It lives in the work we carry, in the truth-telling, in every conversation about the assertion of our rights and justice for our people. As we walk towards treaty, we walk in their footsteps. We carry their spirit, one that refuses to give up, one that continues to rise. and we owe it to them, to our ancestors, to our elders, to Dr. Perkins, and to every generation that fought before us to finish what they began. Because the work they started was never just about protest or policy, it was about dignity and unity and truth. And today, as a dream of treaty becomes a reality, I know they are watching with pride, seeing their vision come to life through us, through our families, and our communities. Treaty has not been an easy journey. It has taken courage, sacrifice, and tireless work from leaders and communities across our countries. Treaty is here because of the resilience of our people who never gave up. It is here because so many Australians, Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal alike, know that our democracy is made stronger when justice walks alongside it. We have a chance to do something remarkable, to set aside politics and to choose courage. Treaty is a commitment to truth, to fairness, and to a shared future. It is how we begin to reset the relationship between black and white. For over 250 years, the absences of treaties have been the wound at the heart of this nation. While Aotearoa forged the Treaty of Waitangi in 1840, while Canada entered into numbered treaties, while the United States struck treaty after treaty with First Nations, Australia chose another path. Our land was declared terra nullius, empty. Our people declared invisible. Our laws, our sovereignties, our voices denied. The initial occupation of the land by European settlers from 1788 onwards was illegal, rapid, and largely uncontrolled. The taking of country and resources was violent as First Peoples were displaced and massacred by settlers in pursuit of our lands and waters. Our ancestors, as children, saw many of their people die. Some were killed in cruel reprisals when they tried to keep their territory. Some were shot down in the blackfella hunt, no different to the kangaroo hunt, simply to clear the land. Some were given presents of poison flower. Some died from the white man's diseases, some from his alcohol. When colonisers arrived, many First Peoples were killed. Those who survived were forced to move to reserves and missions. The history of dispossession in this country is long. Our dispossession was affected by the colonisers through a systemic campaign of intentional violence. The First Peoples estate in Australia has been decimated by colonisation and deliberate government action from 1788 up to the present day. These actions include the sale, leasing and licensing of Crown land, pastoralism and farming, destructions of our sacred sites, extraction of gold and minerals, fragmented ecosystems with devastating consequences. Laws and policies of the British and colonial governments were used to authorise confiscation, theft, use and damage of lands and waters belonging to First Peoples without their consent. The Protection Acts and other related colonial laws and policies deliberately disrupted First Peoples' connections with their traditional lands and waters and each other. By today's standards, a number of these actions would amount to genocidal acts. The colonisers exploited country for the highest short-term economic benefit. That approach to land management pushed the land to the brink of ruin. In adopting such an approach, the colonisers actively shunned our generations of knowledge and practices, and our people felt the full force of colonisation and dispossession, and this still impacts us today. In a single generation, our people went from custodians and effective land managers to slave labourers, caught up in a self-perpetuating system of stolen wealth. Just as the impacts of First Peoples' dispossession continues today, so do the benefits that colonisers gain from exploiting our lands.
Sharing insights from the long, the difficult road to Australia's first treaty with Indigenous people is co-chair of Victoria's First Peoples Assembly, Ngarra Murray. And she's joining you on ABC Radio National's Big Ideas with me, Natasha Mitchell. It's great to have your company. Now, a key part of Victoria's treaty process was holding the country's first truth-telling inquiry, which wrapped up earlier this year.
The Yurok Justice Commission in Victoria heard thousands of these truths in their truth-telling inquiry. Their final report, Truth Be Told, is publicly available, and I urge everyone to read it and consider it. Yurok was the first truth-telling commission in Australia, but it will not be the last. Through treaty, we will ensure ongoing truth-telling is undertaken and to make sure that truths are told and learned in school curriculum and in the broader community, so our future generations know the history of this land, whole and honest. This is to create a future where everyone understands our national story and reckons with the past. Truth and treaty are shared journeys, ones where everyone can come to the table. We wish to continue that legacy of bringing everyone together. We also know what is possible in Victoria is possible in every jurisdiction in this country and on the national level. While we forge ahead in Victoria into a new era, we always consider our people across state and territory boundaries who are doing things their own way, on their own terms, at their own pace, and facing different circumstances. Healing can take a long time, but it is a necessary process across all of these lands. Treaty addresses the past, but it is ultimately about our future. And while we look to build a better future for many generations, we know it requires building capacity, and crucial to that is leadership. It is no secret that Aboriginal people place a great deal of emphasis on our elders and our leaders, and we only need to refer to the namesake of this oration, Dr. Perkins, a leader recognised nationally and internationally, and somewhere in the long list of his accolades, he was one of the very first Aboriginal people to graduate from this university, as we all know. And education is at the forefront of driving lasting change. I'm very proud to say that through treaty, we will establish a First Peoples Institute to foster and assist future leaders, drawing on the knowledge of our extensive history and legacy. It's safeguarding some of the oldest knowledges on earth and using that for nation building work. Work that benefits all of society, that benefits our country and communities, and situates them in positions of strength for our families and our kids and their kids and their kids and so on. Despite the disruption to our country and everything that has happened to us, we remain strong. We are still here. We have survived. Our culture has evolved and we are continually adapting. First Peoples have demonstrated remarkable resilience in maintaining their identity, connection to country and one another. There is an unbroken line between past atrocities, government actions and the experiences of First Peoples today, but our elders never stopped calling for justice. From the early petitions, from the missions of the 19th century to the 1938 Day of Mourning, to the Bark petitions at Yirrkala, to the 1965 Freedom Ride, to the 1967 referendum, to the call for a treaty led by the National Aboriginal Conference in the 1970s and 80s, to the Voice referendum in 2023, our people have never given up. Every march, every protest, every demonstration, every songline of resistance has carried us to this moment. The movement over decades continued to grow in community halls, in homes, in churches, in sporting stadiums, in universities, and on the streets, drawing attention to the appalling living conditions and overt racism experienced by our people, to challenging discriminatory practices and exposing the segregation in country towns. It was our people fighting for their human rights. It was our people who built the first Aboriginal organisations in health, in housing, legal services, women's services and childcare, long before governments would. We organised ourselves for ourselves. The road to treaty has been long. It has consisted of many, many robust conversations with thousands of mobs from every corner of Victoria. No one on the Assembly will tell you that treaty is simple or easy, but big issues require hard work. In all those yarns, we know a consistent thread has been that this is the right course of action for a just future for our people. We often say we stand on the shoulders of giants. Well, we do. We have had so many leaders, leaders who led with both heart and fire, trailblazers like Dr. Perkins. Without them, we would be nowhere close to treaty. Officially, we have been on the path to treaty since 2016, nearly a decade ago, but treaty is not new, nor are we leading the way in the international context. In 1788, the year the white man arrived right here on the shores of Sydney, but not many know that 10 years before that, in 1778, the Delaware Treaty with First Peoples was signed in the United States. 10 years before Victoria was settled in 1840, one of our closest neighbours in Aotearoa signed the Treaty of Waitangi. As recently as 2023, the Whitecap Dakota signed a treaty in Canada. They are not new, and there are hundreds like them. Australia doesn't lack a treaty by accident or because Australia predates the concept. It certainly wasn't because of lack of willingness from First Peoples. It was by decision. This country, not our people, but the people who came here, chose not to do treaty, and our people paid the price. Treaty is about correcting that injustice, pulling ourselves up as a nation to be in line with the international standard, to follow best practice. It's justice for our people. Since the day white man arrived until today, we have fought long and hard for it. 1824, not far from here, Wiradjuri warrior and leader Windradyne came to Sydney to meet Governor Brisbane following the Bathurst War. He walked to Parramatta wearing a hat that simply had the word peace written on it. In 1863, Wurundjeri men William Barak and Simon Wonga walked with a deputation from Corranderk to Melbourne to meet Governor Barclay. They called for a permanent homeland for their people. It was the first of many delegations that the Kulin people sent from Corranderk. 1938, the day of mourning, the work of the Australian Aborigines League and the Aborigines Progressive Association, they called for the emancipation of Aboriginal people, full citizenship rights for their people, and the abolishment of discriminatory legislation. They wanted Aboriginal people to form the policies that relate to the betterment of their people. In 1963, Yolngu people of Eastern Arnhem Land crafted the Yirrkala Bark Petitions. The local clans of the area stated that their land used for hunting and gathering by the Yolngu for time immemorial was being leased, sold and pillaged without their consent. They called for agreement making with the people of Yirrkala. I learned about the Freedom Ride in 1965, led by Dr. Perkins, visiting towns like Moree and Kempsey and Walgett. It demonstrated the immense power of action and what is achieved when people collectively stand up against what we know is wrong. Yet we also know that whatever we do as a people, it is met with opposition. We still face the same ill-founded rhetoric today like back then when we talk about treaty. That somehow an agreement between two peoples who have long been divided by targeted discriminatory laws and policies is divisive. As my co-chair Ruben Berg stated in the Victorian Parliament 2 weeks ago, treaty is not to divide Victoria, but to complete it. In 1988, we saw the Barunga Statement. Aboriginal people called for self-determination, permission to be sought for their lands to be used, and protections of their cultural knowledge and ancestral sites. They called for treaty, which Bob Hawke committed to, a promise that wasn't kept. Yet when we move to address all of this, to do things a new way, to ensure this past is never repeated, some still have the short-sightedness to call it divisive without proposing a viable alternative. The fact is this country has gone about business with First Peoples with devastating effect for centuries. These are, of course, some well-known examples of our people calling for agreement making and land rights, but it is only the surface. Consider all the conversations had, never recorded or written, that happened in churches, school halls, on missions and reserves, on stations and by the riverbanks. Conversations that were about the need for treaties in this land. They would be immeasurable, but each as important as the last. Treaty is the way forward, and we've been ensuring it's at its strongest for many years now. Australia is a prosperous nation, but let's be honest, that prosperity has not been shared equally. The foundations of modern Australia were built on land taken without consent, on the dispossession and marginalisation of First Peoples. That truth is uncomfortable for some, but it is a truth we must face. And yet, in the face of this history, our cultures have endured. Our languages are being spoken again. Our art, our music, our knowledge systems are being celebrated worldwide. First Peoples are leading the way in all different forms, in environmental management, in building community resilience, in innovating to survive and thrive. We are not just the survivors of history, we are the architects of the future. We stand on the cusp of the very first treaty of this country. It is a turning point in the life of this nation. Treaty in Victoria is a bold and necessary step, one that recognises the sovereignty of First Peoples and charts a new future where truth, justice and prosperity walk side by side. Treaty creates a new middle space where the unfinished business between the Crown and First Peoples relations can be addressed, and where communities can shape agreements that honour First Peoples culture, inherent rights and shared futures. This treaty in Victoria will be the first of many. And treaty will be about new relationships grounded in truth and respect. It is our chance to right the wrongs of the past and create a better future together. Treaty will be transformational, transforming relationships, systems, institutions, and futures. It will be a catalyst for lasting, meaningful change that benefits all. Our emerging priorities and aspirations for statewide treaty are grounded in the voices, knowledge and input of the Victorian Aboriginal community over many years. Ultimately, treaty is about restoration and justice, restoration of First Peoples' inherent rights to country, justice for the harm done to us by colonisation. In Victoria, we have been on a long and steady path to truth and treaty for nearly 10 years. We have passed legislation twice, the Advancing the Treaty Process with Aboriginal Victorians Act and the Treaty Authority and Other Elements Act. We have developed policies and made commitments across the parties, and this week we will see the statewide treaty bill pass the parliamentary process to become law. We have taken the time required to lay strong foundations for treaty. For 9 months, we walked through the intensity of history in the making with the very first treaty negotiations. They were demanding, at times exhausting, but always deeply significant. Each conversation has carried with it not just policy or politics, but the weight of the generation who dreamed of this moment and the responsibility to honour those yet to come. Negotiating the first treaty has not been about quick wins. It has been about truth-telling, about confronting uncomfortable realities, and about finding a path forward in a space that has never truly existed in this country before. These months have shown us the depth of resilience, the power of unity, and the courage it takes to stay at the table, even when the challenges feel overwhelming. It is a pathway to a future where First Peoples' strength and resilience shine as a guiding light, where the spirit of our people is recognised, and where true prosperity is shared by all who call this land home. The first negotiated statewide treaty brings together First Peoples through the Assembly and the Victorian Government to build a new relationship. It acknowledges our past and is a chance for all Victorians to move forward together. Subject to the passage of the bill through Parliament and royal and cultural assent, the negotiated treaty will be signed by both parties by the end of the year. Policies and programs work best when the people affected by them have a say in how they are delivered. That's why this bill proposes to put decision-making powers into the hands of the First Peoples Assembly. The statewide treaty establishes Nyinmaa Nyangawarra, a new Outcomes and Justice Commission within the First Peoples Assembly of Victoria. This will have the power to hold government and publicly funded bodies accountable to outcomes for First Peoples by holding parliamentary committee-style hearings, asking questions of ministers, conducting system-wide inquiries and running program-level evaluations. The statewide treaty also creates Nyurna Yurok Taukana to continue the truth-telling and healing process so everyone across the state can understand our past and share a better future. This foundational and important truth-telling work was started by the mandate of the Yurok Justice Commission and its body of work, and we want to build upon this. This treaty heralds an era where everyone prospers. It's built on respect, truth and shared responsibility, when First Peoples' culture, knowledge and authority are central to how we govern, care for country and make decisions together. Everyone prospers. It's children growing up proud of who they are, walking confidently in two worlds, knowing their language, history and rights are honoured. It is healthier lands and rivers because decisions are guided by thousands of years of wisdom. It is a future where our country is known not just for its natural beauty, but for the way it nurtures culture, celebrates diversity, and ensures that safety, dignity, and opportunity is shared by all. In this era, Our ethos and civic responsibility is defined by how deeply we value one another. It is felt in stronger relationships and in communities thriving. The future belongs to the communities who have held the line, who have fought, who have protested, raised their fists, marched in the streets, and negotiated so that our children can stand taller, speak their languages proudly, and live with the knowledge that their rights are recognised. Treaty is not the end of the journey. It is the beginning of a new one. I'll conclude by reiterating some of what I said in Parliament recently. At the forefront of creating change in Victoria through treaty is creating Galangwal. It is our guide to truth and treaty and the creation of accountability for government. In Gunai Kurnai, Galangwal means tip of the spear. A spear that is crafted with a task in mind, created with care. A spear is not haste alone, nor is it passive. It is endurance. It is measured calmness and to understand the timing to take action. We choose this time, now, to act. We carry the fire of those who came before and we honour the spirit of our people, a spirit that has endured for over 65,000 years and continues to shine through every generation. This is a spirit built on powerful principles and unshakable values, values that are woven into everyday life, guiding action, shaping identity, and keeping culture strong. Our elders, like Dr. Perkins, have spoken truth to power, demanding justice and recognition long before the world was ready to listen. Our people never waited for permission to lead. We have shaped change. We have stood tall in the face of injustice and the invincible spirit that defines us. It's our connection to country and people that reminds us we are never alone. It's our big love for family, for the ones who come before and the ones yet to be born. It's our fight for justice, not just for ourselves, but for all people. And above all, it's our pride and dignity in who we are. No matter what is thrown at us, we rise. We sing, we speak, we heal, we remember. This country may try to forget, but we remember. As we stand at this turning point in history, let us remember we are the continuation of our ancestors, their fight, their fire, their faith, their dreams. The world's oldest living culture now moves into a new era defined by strength and pride and unity. And to the generations yet to come, may you always walk with your head high, knowing that your people changed a nation. We are still here. We have always been here, and we will always be here. Our story, the story of First Peoples, is Australia's story. And now together, we write the next chapter in the treaty era. Tonight, as we honour Dr. Charles Perkins AO, let us recommit to the spirit he embodied. Let us carry his fire forward, not just in memory, but in action. For the day is coming, and it will come, when the words justice, equality and peace will no longer be aspirations, but realities. And when that day arrives, we will know that the footsteps of Dr. Perkins and all those who walked with him were not in vain, because they showed us that change is possible, that truth is unstoppable, and that the invincible spirit of our people endures, unshaken, unwavering, and stronger with every generation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
A powerful, a hopeful speech from Ngara Murray, who is co-chair of Victoria's First Peoples Assembly and a Womba Womba Yorta Yorta Dutaroa and Dja Warung woman. She was giving the 25th Dr. Charles Perkins Oration at the University of Sydney on Gadigal country. And the Victorian Treaty will commence this Friday with a ceremony and celebration in Naarm, Melbourne. And if you'd like to share your thoughts on what you've heard today, pop it in an email. We love hearing from you. bigideas@abc.net.au is how to get in touch. That email address again, bigideas@abc.net.au. Now, on our next episode of Big Ideas, a really joyful conversation I shared with Astrid Jorgensen. She is the founder of Pub Choir, which brings together thousands of people at once for one night to sing in a choir, and she is packing out venues around the world. Her new memoir is called Average at Best.
I don't think that songs are right all the time for every situation. So for me, songs are more like they address the ailment. What song do you need for this moment? And so it's a strange position to be in to decide what to give. But it's almost like I put it in the book. It's like I go into a pharmacy of songs and I select the one for the group ailment, which I decide. So obviously I can get it wrong. But I sort of look at how things are going and I try and decide, well, what would feel right for this moment? Sometimes it is a punky up song. Sometimes we need to mellow out and really feel our feels. I've just finished my biggest tour ever. I had 36,000 people come and learn one song from me across Australia and New Zealand. And I thought, what will I dispense in this moment? And I thought, the song that I picked, I decided I needed to put words inside mouths that would be good on this scale. Like, what would I want 36,000 people to say to each other? So I picked this 90s one-hit wonder song called You Get What You Give. Don't give up. You have a reason to live. The music's in you. I'm like, that song is not right for a small show, in my opinion. That was like, I needed that to be a big thing and it felt right. Sure, people still complained about the song choice.
Oh, no.
I cannot pick everyone's favourite song.
So there's a medicine to this, a sort of social medicine in a way.
I suppose I shouldn't say it in such strong terms, but it does feel like, I am a healer. No, it's just more like, I'm trying to listen and respond. What do I think people feel like? You know, sometimes I get it.
I mean, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on and we all feel differently. I'm the one who decides, so of course I get it wrong for some people. Sometimes I do get it just right though. Like say the moments that I think have sparked online, like the viral moments are when I did get it just right. Like at the beginning of COVID, I picked the song Close to You by The Carpenters because it says, I wish I was close to you. And that had a great mouth feel for people when they sang along and it just seemed to hit the spot. And I do think there are songs for every ailment and mood that we have, and it's about ferreting around and trying to decide overall what would feel good.
I sat down with Astrid Jorgensen for a really lovely conversation at the Fitzroy Town Hall. She is the founder of Pub Choir. Her new memoir is called Average at Best, and that conversation is up next on Big Ideas. Don't miss it. Big Ideas is where we bring you big thinkers at the best live events, and you can find and share all our episodes via the ABC Listen app. Just search for Big Ideas and hit follow. That way you will never miss an episode. 4 new episodes every week. I'm Natasha Mitchell. I'll be back next time with more Big Ideas.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.